Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to District Nationals, episode 1.10, I think.
1.10.
I think we're at 1.10. Double digits for District Nats. I'm Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. He is Trey. You can follow him on Twitter at Reverse2R2S's and the show at District BSB. We have a very exciting week to talk about in Nationals baseball. The Nats
winning week,
like a completely different team in some aspects. We'll pump the brakes, right? But this is going to be for all you 84%ers and whatnot. This is going to be a very positive episode. We're only going to focus on the pitching, and where there's honestly a lot of great stuff to talk about. I mean, hell, even Patrick Corbin had a quality start this week. So pigs flying, you know, whatever. It's the Nationals have developed a pitcher, one in the same. It's insane. We're going to talk about it all. But Trey, first, what's going on?
Nick, it was a good week of Nats baseball. They went 4-3 against the Braves and Guardians, two teams that on paper are very, very good, right now. Yeah. Although I will say that the Braves are not quite playing as well. But still, three out of four against them, don't matter. That's a good week. And, you know, honestly, splitting with them would have been fine, but you know, getting the third win is a huge W for the Nats. Mm-hmm. And then didn't necessarily play all that great against Cleveland, but did sneak out the win today to secure a winning week. So winning week, it doesn't really matter how you do it, it's probably a good thing.
Yeah. But we know how they did it. It was on the back of their pitching, and not even like typically when we say bullpen when we say pitching with the Nationals, a lot of that's bullpen. Like their bullpen, they haven't had like a long history of good bullpens, but specifically last year, like, oh, they got some arms, and they still do have some arms, but you kind of think the bullpen covers up a lot of the inefficiencies of the rotation, whether it be short starts, only pitching into the fourth, sometimes barely the fifth, things like that. But no, the Nationals pitching is their strength, is the rotation, and I thought it would be years before that was ever the case. Just, you know, coming into the year, I mean, you have Patrick Corbin, Trevor Williams returning, Josiah Gray was an all-star, but like his first two starts could not have gone worse. You know, Mackenzie Gore, certainly high upside, we just weren't sure, you know, what kind of steps were going to be taken, how big of a step. And then Jake Irvin, great story last year, but like the expectations for him, at least as a prospect profile, no one would have expected this. And that isn't even including the biggest surprise of the season so far is Mitchell Parker, who I don't understand how you can, I don't see a world where you can demote him. There's no world, unless I will caveat. And typically I wouldn't give the Nationals even an ounce of credit for being this forward thinking, but some of the moves they made, and we'll talk about it briefly later on, but some of the moves they have made and have been making show me like they're not just gonna sit around forever. Like they're actually making moves that I'm not gonna try to sound too pompous, but like I would make, right? Like just cutting ties with Victor Robles for one. I mean, that was a big story of the week. They let Victor Robles go. Trey, you called it last
episode. I was actually surprised, even though I predicted it. I was still surprised.
They let him go. He wasn't claimed. They could have, I mean, he probably would have rejected the assignment anyways. They could have just assigned him to AAA. No, they outright released him. They were just cut ties, you know. And to an extent, I get it. If you're not going to improve after 11 years in the organization, there's no better candidate for a change of scenery. So I kind of get that. But like releasing him outright, that's a statement, right? Keeping Jacob Young up and releasing Robles was a statement. Optioning Riley Adams to get not only regular at-bats, something he needs, but to get work at first base sends a warning shot to the current first baseman on the roster, Joey Meneses, Joey Gallo. Hey, get your shit together, or we're going to find a guy that can replace you and get him the regular at-bats that he deserves, because when he gets regular at-bats, he actually produces well. Like, there are some guys that just don't excel in a backup role, only playing every fourth or fifth day. That's fine. Like, in just logistically, it makes sense. Not logistically, logically, it makes sense. Like, if you only play once a week, it's hard to get into a rhythm. Right. So they're trying to get Riley Adams' rhythm back and also send a warning shot to the first baseman. So I only say that to preface the Mitchell Parker conversation, because Josiah Gray is throwing a third simulated game this week and would seemingly be activated shortly thereafter. Cade Cavalli just had a rehab start in High A Wilmington. And I think he still is a couple weeks away, but they're going to want him on the major league roster sooner rather than later, right? Because mm-hmm. we kind of all understand that he's about ready. Not that he can't use some more starts in you know, AAA, for instance, to, you know, get some experience under his belt, and they're certainly going to be cautious with him, but they want him on the major league roster. That all that being said, I just don't know if there's a spot. It's kind of crazy. Like, you know, Corbin's the obvious one, but, you know, he just had a quality start, and I know that the numbers are still bad. I'm certainly not defending Corbin, but it's like, are they going to eat maybe we'll call it $20 million
probably,
to not have him pitch on the team? I doubt it. I guess they could. Trevor Williams would be the other one, but he's been too good as a starter to move to a reliever. So I know I'm going on and on rambling. The one thing I would potentially give them credit for or be okay with is if they option Mitchell Parker, just say, hey, we're going to just space out your starts in AAA. It's much easier to do that at AAA than it is in the majors. You know, we'll space out your starts and then bring you back up like after the trade deadline. I would be okay with that. I still wouldn't love that, because he's already showing he can pitch every fifth day at the major league level, and you don't want to ruin that rhythm. So it's a good problem to have for sure, but it is a problem nonetheless, because for the first time in a long time, the Nationals have several more quality pitchers than there are spots in the rotation. So it's almost like exciting to see what they're going to do about it.
Yeah. And it also, the trade deadline is a big deal there. Yep. It depends on when moves are made, because we know Williams is probably gone.
I would hope so.
At the deadline. I mean,
for multiple reasons. I don't like him, but also he has trade value.
He has only 1 year on his deal, so it makes a lot of sense to get something for him while he is pitching at, I mean, quite frankly, an elite level. Like,
yeah, he's been great.
I can't say that he's been one of the best pitchers, because he doesn't have the innings. He doesn't throw past the fifth inning, like, ever, which is fine. That is exactly what we want. Because when he gets up over 80 pitches, he loses effectiveness. And so you got, you know, Davey this year, I'll give him credit. He has actually kept his word and pretty much, for the most part, kept Williams out of the sixth inning, mm-hmm. unless he's like really cruising. Right. And I think that's what needed to be done, because I feel like last year he would get up to 100 pitches and just be you know, awful.
And Dayton also loves leaving guys in too long.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So it's been a little refreshing that he's at least done something with, like, you know, analytics third time through, stuff like that.
Right.
But the big difference for Williams this year has been his pitch usage. He's reduced drastically the amount of fastballs he's thrown, which in turn has made the fastball his most effective pitch because he has been able to mix in this new sweeper, which has been very effective for him. Dudes really can't see that pitch. I noticed the other day when he was starting that, like, man, he can get some swing and miss with that thing. And it's like, when I'm watching, I'm like, it doesn't look that deceptive. So I'm wondering, you know, is he tunneling it perfectly with something else? I don't know, but that sweeper has been a big, big help for him. First of all, getting the swing and miss, but also getting soft contact, because his biggest problem last year was the barrels and the amount of hard contact he gave up. And it's just not happening this year. And funnily enough, that's just this run value chart is crazy because the highest run value of any pitch for the Nationals is Trevor Williams' four seam fastball. And using it less. He's using 35%
just picking his spots, yeah.
Compared to like 50. And that is just crazy. Just that little difference in the arsenal has made it so much more effective, which is just wild. And I think it's one of the more effective fastballs in the entire league, if I'm not mistaken. Let me actually pull that up.
I think you're right.
Because, which is just, what? That is insane when you think about this guy from last year. One of the worst pitchers in baseball last year, if maybe the besides Corbin, the worst starter. And yeah, so he has his four-seam fastball is the 17th most valuable pitch in baseball this year. Crazy, crazy stuff, especially if you watched him pitch last year, where he was basically just threw everything right down the middle. That's been the big difference as well, is he's kept things out of the middle of the plate. His location has been a lot better. Just everything about his game has been better. And, you know, we've been pointing out, and everyone's been pointing out, that Sean Doolittle joining the staff obviously has a lot to do with this. And I definitely agree, but I'm going to do something crazy. Nick, are you ready?
I know where you're going, and I begrudgingly agree.
I'm going to give credit to Jim Hickey.
Yep.
Because here's the deal, right? He's the coach. He's the pitching coach. He doesn't have to listen to anything Sean Doolittle says if he doesn't want to. He could go exactly back to what he was doing, and he could do it however he wants. He's the main pitching coach. But he's not doing that. He's been able to compromise. And when you hear the guys talk, they mention Doolittle a lot, but they also mention Hickey. And, you know, when you get multiple minds working together, you know, Doolittle might be very analytical. Maybe some guys can't quite grasp what he's saying, but then Hickey has a different way of saying it that helps them out. You know, it's just like the melding of the minds there seems to be working very well.
I do think it's the opposite of what you just said. I think Hickey was probably saying things that weren't resonating, and Doolittle was able to bridge the gap.
Because maybe Sean was able to show them the stats behind it.
Right. Because, like, if we just try to look at it as, you know, objectively as we can, right, all bias aside, really the only thing that has changed from last year, from 2 years ago till this year, is Sean Doolittle, right? Like, I'm sure Hickey is trying new things. I'm trying to be objective about this, so I'm not saying Hickey is just like my way or the highway with it all. But, you know, this is the first year where we've seen legitimate improvement from not just one guy, but several guys
across the board, basically.
Across the board. I mean, even Kyle Finnegan has stepped up his game. He was solid last year. He's elite this year.
He's gotten better.
So it's like, it's across the board. And so Hickey, sure, deserves some credit, but, like, I know it's popular to praise Sean Doolittle right now, but, like, the evidence is just, like, it's there, right? Right. But, like, the evidence is there just in the numbers. It's so much better than we ever could have imagined.
Yeah. I'm with you that Doolittle is the main reason. I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
you know, Hickey could basically tell him to F off.
Right.
You know, and he's not
I
doing
get
that.
that.
He's actually like willing to compromise and willing to have some dialogue about these guys. And specifically, I think Hickey has been involved in the pitch arsenal development this year, which was probably not what you wanted to hear last year, because he had a
No,
lot
not
of
at all.
he added a lot of pitches to guys, and we were kind of like, why are we doing this? But now it's being refined and we're seeing some great results with it. So yeah, the coaching staff on in terms of the pitching has done a good job. That's probably the only part of the staff that has done good this year, I'd say, because there's a
Yeah.
lot of other parts that I'm not a fan of, but we're not going to get into that today. We're talking about the good, and that good is the pitching. And
Yep.
you mentioned the rotation. Obviously Mitchell Parker, that's going to definitely be a question about what they do with him, because I agree. I don't think you can, in terms of performance, obviously you can't pull him out of this rotation. It's kind of just going to become based on, you know, who's healthy, who's not, who's available at the time. When Gray comes back, obviously he's going to get back in the rotation. And then Cavalli is just depend on his timeline. If Cavalli isn't ready, you know, this month, you might see Williams actually gone before Cavalli comes up. Because, you know, you never know. Maybe Williams regresses hard. So maybe you want to get what you can get for him, like, you know, somewhat soon. So you could see a somewhat early trade for him from another team. But,
So I want to talk more about the pitching and dive deeper into the secret sauce. I use that term on District Baseball this week. I'm going to use it here too. I want to dive into the secret sauce a little bit. But can I say something wild right now? If we're
okay.
being wild, if we're just being blindly optimistic,
If we are being unhinged.
if we are being unhinged, the Nats are a game out of the wild card spot.
Dude, I literally tweeted this the other day. I don't think it's that crazy to think that this team could make the playoffs if they tried.
The NL is so bad this year. And I'm not saying that as like, oh, that's the only reason the Nats are good. Again, this is our positive vibes episode. But like, again, if they really wanted to, they could go for it.
Yeah.
And,
At least compete for a
maybe they
spot.
end up losing, to the Phillies of the world, the Dodgers of the world, whatever. But like, again, if they really wanted to, they could go for it. And like, so let's just say, they overtake the Giants who are currently, or Giants slash Cubs who are currently in the final wild card spot. The Nats finish as a sixth seed, right? So they would play the Brewers if, the standings hold.
A lot of hypotheticals here.
Lot of hypothetical, right? I wouldn't be shocked if the Nats knock off the Brewers, Like, I feel like they match up pretty well, and I actually like the Nats' chances in that situation, with as batshit as it sounds.
Well, the thing about playoffs as well is that it's built on pitching. And
Just
right
get hot,
now,
yeah.
the Nats have the pitching. There's no doubt.
Right.
Up and down the roster, the starters, the bullpen, they have it. Obviously,
Yeah.
the big question at that point becomes the offense. And we know that although he is injured at the moment, there's a guy. There's a guy. He's real good. He's in AAA.
They could.
Like, I'm just
So.
saying, man, like, that is such a huge boost to the offense.
For
Obviously,
sure.
he has a hamstring problem right now, so that's kind of
Yeah.
a moot point at this
Right.
point. But also Dylan Cruz is also having a
He's
really
heating up.
good, he's heating up, and so he's also a guy that's supposed to come up this year. Maybe, you know, around the trade deadline, if this team is, you know, still within range of 500,
And
there's a
anyone.
chance. I get what you, I like, I see where you're coming from there.
Anyone who's like, oh, no, you can't do that. Okay,
Why
God,
not?
I'm if we're unhinged, I'm just gonna be totally unhinged. Evan Carter was like a key piece of the Rangers winning the World Series last
Yeah,
year.
he played like 20 games before that.
He
So,
his rookie season was effectively the playoff run. So it's like it's not, yeah, it's certainly not an ideal situation to have your top prospects, key rookies, key foundational pieces, their first real batch of key major league experience be in the playoffs.
yeah.
But like you want them to have that experience, right? There's nothing worse than a team getting to playoffs and you're like, wow, no one on this team has been in the
Yeah,
playoffs
deer
before.
in the
Like,
headlights,
yeah,
dudes
not
don't
just
know what they're
baseball, but like
doing.
all sports.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
that's a big thing is like veteran leadership. And the way to get experience is to actually be there, right? So it's like you know, playoffs aren't guaranteed. I mean, the Nats could suck next year with all injuries and, you know, shit had just happened. So it's like, if you're in the conversation for the playoffs and you have guys in AAA, whether they're rookies or 30-year-old guys that are just waiting for a shot and they can help, like, all right, let them help.
Yeah. I think there's also something to be said about showing your team and your fan base that you're willing to, that you want to win, like, and like show that you're going to compete. Like, they don't have to make the playoffs this year, but
and
like,
that's what I was talking about earlier with like swapping Adams for Millis and DFAing Robles.
Exactly.
Like,
make winning moves. Exactly.
They're slowly starting to make moves where in like years past, they wouldn't have made these moves. So it's just like, it's almost like I'm starting to see like a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And it's fun.
We obviously that, you know, that could change.
Yeah.
That could change. We're being very cautious here.
Back to the pitching. So, you know, that just poses an interesting conversation. Like, pitching's your strength. You certainly don't want to completely deplete your strength. Like, injuries are still a very knock on wood. Like, injuries are still a very real concern for any team. You know, teams are losing pitchers left and right. So it's like, you don't want to completely deplete your depth. But at the same time, if you do decide like, hey, we have a shot, you know, we're almost at the halfway point of the season, we're only a game back of the wild card spot, we can go for this, but we need more help on offense. It's like, all right, well, maybe you trade, like, if Josiah Gray comes back and is pitching really well, right? Like, you know, kind of what we expected last year, maybe the underlying numbers aren't in love with him, but at least he's pitching well enough to like give you a shot to win. That's all you can ask for, right? So then you have like six legitimate starting pitchers that can help you win right now. Well, maybe you trade one of those guys for help on offense. And
maybe the Williams trade is,
you're not selling. You're not selling, but you're swapping pieces to try to bolster the entire team and not just rely on your pitching to win 1-0 games. So it, like, granted, the Marlins are a complete dumpster fire, but a Luis Arraez for Pablo Lopez trade comes to mind. It'll obviously be to a lesser degree, but like, if there's a bat on a expiring deal and, you know, maybe it's a, I trade a prospect for this bat, but then I trade Trevor Williams for a prospect, like, you know, sort of a three-team trade, but like sort of, you know, you're really just swapping Williams for a bat. You know, I could see that. But then again, a ton of hypotheticals. Do you even want to trade Williams? He's been your best pitcher.
Well, I mean,
he's
like
the easiest to trade.
In this scenario, if we're like, we want to make the playoffs this year, maybe not, but like, obviously,
right. it's just...
they kind of have to. But I see what you're saying there. But honestly, with the way that this pitching, the team's pitching depth looks now, like, you know, you're obviously losing something when you trade him, but there's, you know, if Gray, it kind of depends on Josiah here, actually.
It very much does.
Yeah, if he's got a, because like, his first two starts, I kind of don't even put any stock into him because he's hurt. Like, in the second start, he was topping out at 90. Like, let's be honest, he wasn't 100%. So if he comes back and looks good, then I'm more willing to like move a pitcher at that point because you at least have him playing well. If he comes back and struggles, it's more in the questionable territory.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So it kind of depends on him. Maybe Cavalli as well, depending on how well he does.
Yeah. We'll see. It's certainly fun brain activity to think about the potential possibilities.
Being competitive. I know. Right.
I know. Right. But as going back to the pitchers, what has made them so successful? And another reason I will still credit Doolittle, mainly Doolittle's bread and butter. Was living at the top of the zone with the fastball. And we've seen that a lot with these pitchers, particularly the lefties being Gore and Parker. But even Irvin's doing that too. Fastball, top of the zone. And then, you know, playing your off speed off that high fastball. And for the lefties, just that arm action, that angle, it works well. But even Irvin's curveball is like a plus pitch, and he's been able to play it off that high fastball. His curveball currently has a run value of 3, which isn't like otherworldly, but it's exceptional, or like exceptional considering, you know, what we expected from Irvin. So it's like, aside from Gore and Williams to an extent, because Williams isn't a strikeout pitcher, he relies a lot on soft contact, so like he's gonna have multiple pitches in his arsenal, but for the most part, a lot of these the national success is just relying on high fastball and then a really good offseed playing off that fastball. Gore has a slider.
Yeah, Gore's slider's been very, very good.
Exceptional. So like he's kind of the outlier, but like Parker, it's high fastball and then curveball or slider, whatever. And then he mixes in a split finger, but his split finger is not all that great. It's a different look. Irvin, same thing. He has a changeup, but it's not all that great. It's just a different look. So the Nationals are just really making the most of what they have in terms of like arsenal. But then you look at Josiah Gray and they're teaching him like 8 different pitches. So it's just weird.
I'm really excited to see kind of what his arsenal is going to be.
I'm hoping they go a less is more approach with him.
I agree.
Because they've done it with everyone else and they've done it to a lot of success.
Yeah, I think the only one they've added was like Irvin. Irvin added the cutter, which actually has been pretty solid. So, you know, not bad.
He just hasn't thrown it a ton. I mean, 12% of the time isn't insignificant, but yeah.
It's 12% is totally fine.
It's a different look.
Yeah, it just gets them off the curveball a little bit. Gets them off the heater a little bit. Like, it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't show it. Especially lefties.
So like for anyone listening and I guess even watching, just to understand what I'm saying, like Irvin throws his four seam 36% of the time, his curveball 32% of the time, right? That's the split I'm talking about. Mackenzie Gore throws his fastball 54% of the time, his curveball 20% of the time. Like, I mean, that's 75% right there. He's not going to have a ton, but even his slider, he throws it basically the other 15% of the time, or, you know, 15 out of the 25% of the time.
I'm cool with him throwing 50% heater because he's good. It's better than last year, which I think he was like 65%.
Yeah.
That's too much, but 50, that's okay. Especially when you got a heater like
Mitchell Parker, 47% heater, 28% curveball. And then let's look at Trevor Williams. I haven't looked at his, so I'm interested to see what his splits are. So he is 37% sinker, which makes sense because he's a pitch to contact guy, and then 29% slider. So like he's really picking and choosing his fastball spots to the tune of 11% of the time. But like even him, Trevor Williams, who has he was terrible last year, but like he's been able to throw like 5 different pitches at times. So like I will give him a little bit of a wider arsenal than anyone else. Like still 2 pitches he's throwing more than 65% of the time. So it's like they're really leaning into the bread and butter. Oh no, I'm looking at Corbin. I'm an idiot. I was like, that doesn't look right. Oh, Corbin's throwing 65% of the time. Williams, all right, 55% of the time, sweeper, four seam. I was like, that doesn't make sense.
He reduces four seam use this year,
right?
As well.
So point being, they're just really relying on the bread and butter and playing to their pitcher strengths instead of trying to make them something they're not. except for Josiah Gray. It felt like Josiah, they were really trying to like make him this jack of all trades, but in turn they made him a master of none. So I'm really hoping they rely on, you know, Josiah's slider slash curveball. And
yeah, the slider was the pitch, man. That's got to come back.
He doesn't need a sweeper. He frankly doesn't need a cutter. Like, cause the cutter just blends with the slider and makes it less effective. Like, yeah, get rid of the sweeper, get rid of the cutter.
However the slider comes back is what I want.
Right.
If that means you have to ditch the cutter, and I think he has a decent cutter, but if that means you got to get rid of it, then whatever. Cause the slider was the pitch.
Yeah. The other thing I've noticed, like when, you know, just doing an examination of these, and obviously Baseball Savant only provides so much context. So you got to, you know, look at the whole picture and not just the Baseball Savant page and the reds and the blues. But it is funny to see Mackenzie Gore and Mitchell Parker side by side, because Mitchell Parker has basically been a Mackenzie Gore light and is still very, very good.
Yeah, I'll take that.
It's just funny. And like all four pitchers that we're talking about all have great extension. And that might be an issue, you know, talking about Gray, or like going back to Gray, Josiah Gray's extension is like one of the worst in baseball. So that might, you know, have a lot to do with why they're trying to treat him differently. If it were me, I would just completely redo his mechanics. And I know that's an off-season thing, but like his mechanics are terrible. So that's a separate conversation. We're going to stay positive. And for the record, I still am a huge fan of Josiah Gray. I hope he comes back and lights the world on fire. But it is really interesting to see how in a lot of facets, but you know, with the pitchers in particular, the Nationals are finally leaning into what has made them successful and not trying to take guys to fit their mold. They're actually being a little bit more receptive to the uniqueness and just each pitcher's abilities than they were in the past.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the extension thing is interesting, because I'm not sure about Jake Irvin, but Parker and Gore obviously are two big extension guys.
Irvin's 87th percentile.
That makes sense to me based on how his fastball plays, because he doesn't throw his fastball that hard on average, but it plays harder than it is, especially when he locates it.
Even Corbin's 80th percentile.
Yeah. So Gray's the outlier there. And, you know, you don't have to have extension to be a good pitcher, but when you're with his arsenal, you know, he's not a sinker baller. He's not a guy throwing a changeup a lot. That's where you might want a guy with less extension, because you're getting that more movement. Mm-hmm. You don't really want that with Gray, because he already struggles to command his pitches in general. So the longer they have to move, the more likely they are to be out of the zone. So yeah, I'm with you that it's a more of a mechanical thing. I don't know if they're going to change that or if they're going to try and work with what he's got. But if that's the case, at least contain the arsenal down to four, possibly five pitches, but four is probably what I want.
Yeah.
Seven.
They won't do anything this year. It's an off season thing and there's just too much to completely redo. But I would hope there's honestly significant adjustments being made when he comes back. So we can only hope. The other thing I noticed is Nats pitchers actually don't get a lot of chase. They have some whiff, but they don't get a lot of chase except for Mitchell Parker. Mitchell Parker is the outlier in kind of that aspect where he's getting a lot of guys to chase. And it could just be honestly just data and sample size. Like, you know, Mitchell Parker has 9 career starts, so teams are still trying to figure him out. But right now he's getting a lot of chase on his pitches. And that's where, even though it's not great overall, that's where like split finger comes into play, because that's a chase pitch. His curveball is a chase pitch. So he's really the only one who's been able to do that at a high level. Even Mackenzie Gore, he's kind of an outlier in his own right, because he's the only one who's blowing it by people.
Yeah. He doesn't need chase.
He doesn't need chase. He will challenge you in the zone, and more often than not, you're not going to win. And then the last thing is more of an obvious thing. It's kind of what you would expect if a rotation's good. If I tell you, you know, this team has a really good rotation, and you ask why, and I ask you to guess why, your answer probably going to be like, oh, well, they pitch deep in the games and they don't walk guys. And that's really what we're seeing. The Nats pitchers have not been walking guys, and that's been a huge issue in the past.
Gore's, oh my God. whatever they got him, last year I had real concerns about Gore ever being able to find command, because even when he would throw strikes, they weren't in the right spots.
No.
Now he's not only not walking batters, he's throwing the ball where he wants to throw the ball, where he needs to throw the ball to be effective.
Yeah.
His command in just one off season has really, really improved. And that's a big deal, because, he had some concerns there, because he's just he was a little too erratic. They simplified his delivery a lot. I've noticed, especially since he came up to the league, he had that very weird, the longer leg kick where he would kind of hold it out and then arms would go out. Now it's very simplified. It's there's really not much movement at all in his delivery pre-pitch. So
Mitchell Parker too. I mean, he had a 12% walk percentage last year in the minors, and he's walking less than 6% of batters faced. It's nuts.
2.16 per nine. That's Mitchell Parker's is crazy, because no one was ready for this. Everyone thought that he had walk issues. Everyone thought that he had homer issues, and it just hasn't happened yet. he definitely hasn't had the walk issue. No. That has been established. I mean, he really goes after guys. He doesn't get intimidated. That honestly, we can look at the numbers all we want. What I've been most impressed with Parker is how stoic he is out there. I mean, he
Dodgers,
does nothing.
Astros shoved against them both.
Nothing gets to him. Even when something goes wrong, he is so chill. Like, he doesn't let anything get to him. Gore has gotten better at that this year too, because he's definitely an emotional guy, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But you have to know when it's valuable to use your emotion and when it's not. And I feel like Gore has gotten better. Gore last year, I remember, had a screaming match with Victor Robles at one point, which
I do remember.
It was actually kind of justified, if I'm being honest. But you don't want that to happen. This year, there was an opposite scenario where he actually backed him. Obviously, now Victor Robles is gone, but you get the point. He's being a good teammate, being a leader. His mental has gotten a lot better, and in turn, his pitching has gotten better. So just a lot of really good developments here for some of these young guys, some of these guys that are going to be here for a while. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal, because the last couple seasons, it didn't look like the Nats could develop any pitching. And all of a sudden, it seems like they might have developed three pitchers at once. So good on this pitching staff, and the coaches around them have done a good job, in terms of the pitchers. Because I have I have other issues with coaching staff, but really good stuff. And we've been talking a lot about the rotation. We mentioned the bullpen, but the bullpen's been really, really strong. They had ups and downs.
Minus two guys, but yes.
But for the most part, you don't have it like it was last year, where there's two good guys as the A bullpen. It's more like four or five that you could probably put in there and say, I'm kind of comfortable with this right now.
And now it's just the utilization. David needs to learn how to properly utilize guys, because he finds himself in too many spots where it's like, oh, if I go to this guy, or this guy, they're each pitching 3 days in a row. So he needs to mix and match a little bit better and trust.
That's
that,
still a struggle, but their actual performance has gotten significantly better.
Performance wise, it's better. Yeah.
I mean, Hunter Harvey is one of the more dominant relievers in the game right now. Dylan Floro has been excellent in terms of run prevention.
Yeah, really excellent.
And I'm tired of people talking bad about my boy Derek Law on Twitter. Okay. Every time he comes in with a runner on base and he gives it up, I get so mad, because we know the stats. We know you bring him in clean and he's great. And people on Twitter don't get it. And then I'm like, What more do you want? He's got a 2.76 ERA in 32 innings. He's top five in appearances.
He wasn't supposed to make the team.
I know. This is a 33-year-old journeyman. What more do you want from this guy? He's doing great. I mean, this was a dude I expected him to have a 4.5.
Of all the hills to die on, Trey is dying on the Derek Law.
I don't get why he's getting
It's not so much him. It's the Davey thing.
I know.
Why bring
he,
in?
He gets the attribute.
No,
he
I
gets
know.
Attributed.
I know.
And I'll get. Yeah, you know what I mean.
I
you
think
know.
It's just displacement. but
he's been pretty good, guys. Let's be
honest. Yes. So I'm not sure if Tanner Rainey still exists, but he's.
Yeah, is he still taking up a roster?
He hasn't pitched in 14 days. So it was basically a phantom IL stint. So glad we kept him on the roster. And then,
yeah, I don't even think they know what to do.
Yeah, Jordan Weems has been bad. Sorry, yeah, buddy.
I know. The Weems dog.
But, you know, the rest of the bullpen's good enough that hopefully Weems has time to figure it out. I will say that.
He's been walking too many people, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, but all in all, the Nats pitching is looking great. Hickey definitely deserves some credit. He's at least earned a stay of execution. Is that the term?
Yeah, I think you're correct. Yeah.
Not so much for Darnell Coles. Not so much for Darnell Coles.
No, yeah.
He can be shipped off into the
offense
sun.
Is the a complete opposite of this.
Yeah.
Next week on the entire offense episode, we're just going to destroy it.
Completely negative. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Like the deadline looms large every single year, regardless. It looms very large this year because the worst thing the Nats can do is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Buy or sell, both are perfectly fine and acceptable and reasonable and understandable. Doing nothing is not.
Yeah.
There's zero reason to not do anything. So we'll talk about that as we approach the deadline next month. But for right now, it's fun. The Nationals pitching is doing well. So let's enjoy it while it lasts and see if we can get a couple more series wins this week. We got the Mets coming into town this week, and then the Braves come back as well. So we got 7 games this week, all at home, all in a row.
Division.
All in division. So it'll be excited. I'm going to go ahead and say it since we're being unhinged and positive. Nat sweep the Mets. I think that might be the first time I've ever predicted the Nat sweep.
I'm not going to go that far, but I think they do win the series.
Boo.
I can't do it.
You'll die on the Derek Law Hill, but you won't join me in my sweep.
I'll go ahead. How many games are they playing against the Braves this time? 3?
4.
So really back-to-back 4-game series against the same team. That's pretty crazy. Yeah. I'll say that I'll give them a 4-3 week again. How about that? Is that good enough?
That's fine. That's
I can't go sweep, although like it's not I don't hate that.
Yeah.
Like I think it could happen.
Yeah. Thanks for your huge vote of confidence.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Anyways, that does it for this episode. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure if we'll be all negative. We'll see how this week goes. We'll see how we're feeling. But in the meantime, be sure to follow us on Twitter at DistrictBSB, Trey at Reverse2R2SS, myself, Coach Moose. We appreciate listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff on YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, all that good stuff. But in the meantime, let's go.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.